This is the Empowered Caregiver Show. If you are a caregiver or know someone who is, this show is meant to uplift you through education and support, while also lifting up every caregiver's invaluable role in society. Now, here is the Empowered Caregiver and your host, Liza Helen Brand.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Helen Brand. Today, I will be talking with Tim Markle of The Forgiveness Factor. Tim's teachings are based on the work of Dr. Robert Enright, the father of forgiveness research. Since May is Mental Health Awareness Month, I thought Tim would be a perfect guest because I personally believe that the ability to forgive can play a huge role in one's mental health. So I cannot wait to talk more with Tim about forgiveness and the awesome work that he does. But before I jump into that, I want to make sure that I give a shout out to the organizations that have supported the Empowered Caregiver Show along the way. The first one is the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance. You can learn more about the alliance at wisconsincaregiver.org. Wisconsincaregiver.org is an amazing one-stop place where you can learn all things caregiving in Wisconsin. You can also follow them on Facebook at Wisconsin's Family Caregiver Support Programs. Lastly, the Alliance is always looking for organizations and individuals to be part of the Alliance. So there's information on their website at wisconsincaregiver.org on how you can join. They do a lot of amazing work to support caregivers throughout Wisconsin, including work on helping companies become more caregiver friendly. So I strongly encourage everyone to go check them out. The second sponsor I'd like to thank is Wisconsin Early Autism Project. I have worked with Wisconsin Early Autism Project for nearly 20 years, and I would say that what they have done to support my son in his autism journey was probably one of the most impactful and far-reaching programs or therapies that we were a part of. So to learn more about their services and their locations throughout the state of Wisconsin, go to wiautism.com. And switching gears, there's one piece of advocacy information that I'd like to get out there as well. In the U.S. Aging's annual appropriations request letter to Congress, they outline the critical importance of investing in OAA, the Older Americans Act, and other vital discretionary programs that help older adults live independently in their home. What needs to be done now that they have this letter, they presented it to Congress, we as citizens need to advocate for it, right? Things just don't happen. We have to call, we have to write, many things that we can do as citizens to advocate for proper funding to support the seniors in our state. The U.S. Aging's collective goal is to ensure that members of Congress recognize that the funding for aging network programs and services needs to be significantly increased. There's years that it went down, there's years that it stayed the same, but rarely has there been an increase in funding for long-term basis supports. And the three reasons that we need, and I mean need, increase in funding for the OAA is one, to serve the rapidly growing number of older adults who need support. Two, to meet the greater complexity of the needs among older adults that are being served. And three, to address the workforce challenges that are affecting older adults' access to services. The 2025 appropriations request urges Congress to significantly increase funding for three subtitles of the Act, which include support services, Native American aging programs, and the National Family Caregiver Support Program. So please contact your representatives and senators now to advocate for funding for OAA programs and services. And if you want to learn more about that, there's lots of different places you can go to do that, one of them being usaging.org. I also wanted to let everyone know that the 2024 Wisconsin Respite Summit will be held Wednesday, June 12th at 8:15 in Eau Claire. There's no fee to attend this summit. Registration and breakfast will begin at 8:15, and then the program will actually start at 9 o'clock and end around 3 p.m. During this time, community partners, family caregivers, care recipients, and professionals from all around the state will gather to increase awareness and the need for respite care, and to help develop and renewed continuing commitment to the services of Wisconsin families. So respite is key, I think, a key component to mental health, a topic we're going to be talking about soon. So if you want to get involved in that program, you can go to respitecarewi.org. It's respitecarewi.org. So as I mentioned earlier, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I have with me today Tim Markle from the Forgiveness Factor. Hello, Tim, and thank you so much for being here.
Good morning. I'm so excited to be here. And just a shout out to the respite care thing. I am planning on being there. And
awesome.
So I encourage everyone, come on out, come on up to Eau Claire and say hi.
Can you give a little more insight? Because I didn't go into the whole agenda. Like, do you know offhand topics that are going to be covered or why it would be important for someone to go?
Well, I've been there in the past. And so one of the reasons that I find it really important is that it's a bunch of people that are really concerned about helping people to have mental breaks and physical breaks from the hard work that they do around caregiving. And so we talk about what are some of those innovative ways that you can take those breaks when your life is already stuffed full of stuff. How do you fit another thing into there? We'll learn about some of the latest legislature that's going through about how to support respite care workers, the funding for respite. So it should be a really full day.
Lots of important topics. And I did a presentation at the Circles of Life conference last week, and I saw you there. And did you present as well?
I ended up presenting on the other side of my life, talking about healthcare transition.
Awesome.
And helping students with disabilities to transition into the adult world of healthcare.
Ooh, something that you and I should connect about, because that's where I'm at with my son. Yes. So, well, I had talked a little bit, we touched on just a little bit about respite in my presentation and some of the barriers. And not only is finding a respite, respite provider, a barrier or an obstacle, but also, like you had said, incorporating it. A lot of people have a lot of guilt around using respite. And I would like, and I'm sure you would like this as well, to debunk that, because it's absolutely necessary for your own well-being.
Absolutely. And it goes back to a phrase that I know people have heard before, but it's really true, is that you cannot pour water out of an empty cup. Mm. And it's a phrase that's been out there, and we could just sort of poo-poo it and say, oh, well, that's cute, and that's like the cat hanging on the limb. Oh, just hang in there. Oh, thank you so much for that really unhelpful advice. But it's really true, is that if we want to give the best to our family members that we are taking care of, we need to think about taking care of ourselves. Is that if we are tired and angry, and if our bodies are not maximally functioning, then we're not going to be able to care for our family members the way we want to.
Right.
And so we really do need to look at ourselves and look at, okay, where are those times where we can get those mini breaks into our days? Where are those days where maybe we could bring someone in for respite and have that bigger break, that longer break, where maybe there's this, I would say a little list, but it's really usually a big list of things that, I really want to get done so that I can feel more comfortable in my house or more comfortable in my life. Is some people, the chaos that's around them, they're fine with that. But with other people, it's like, I can't be comfortable if there's not clean dishes.
Right.
I can't be comfortable if the dust bunnies are threatening to overwhelm my house, if they're gathering together and they're coming at me. I need a certain space. And so respite can give us that chance, not just to have an emotional break from what could be a very draining, though loving, relationship, but it can also maybe give us that time to bring a little bit of order to the chaos.
Well,
and that's really important for me.
Yes. And you say loving relationship, and having that respite plays plays into that, because like you said, if you have nothing left to give, you know, it's going to impact your relationship in a negative way, right? So you need that to recharge. I like the saying about the cup. I thought for sure you were going to do the old put your oxygen mask on yourself.
I thought about it, but I was just in an airplane, and I don't even want to think about it. So I don't, you know.
But they're both the same. You know, they sound nice. Everyone can say yada, yada, yada. But I really like this awareness that I think is growing about the importance of it. And not only, you know, why it's necessary, but like I said, for some people, there's barriers, so they write it off, when really we should be stopping and saying, okay, what are the barriers? What are our solutions? There's got to be options. We've got to find a way to incorporate this, just like you find a way to incorporate sleep and eating and everything else to keep you healthy, right?
Exactly. And one of those things is in my mind, is there's not a template. There's not like this checklist that you can go down and say, okay, for my mental well-being, if somebody would just give me a checklist about what's good for me, it's so individualized. Because our paths are individualized, the way that we react to the world is individualized. And so one of the first steps is taking this moment to actually reflect on what is it that fills me up? What is it that gives me energy? What is it that makes me happy, that gives me joy? And a lot of times we don't stop to think about that.
I love that. You know, if you're using respite to help you, you need to know what it is you want, what it is you need. I'm talking with Tim Markle from The Forgiveness Factor. And before I go down too many rabbit holes, Tim, I want to make sure the audience knows, what is The Forgiveness Factor and how did you get into it?
Great. Well, Forgiveness Factor exists to promote forgiveness as a way to be mentally well, as a way to heal from some of our past traumas, to heal from people that have hurt us. And so I go and I teach classes on forgiveness, again, based on the work of Dr. Robert Enright. I do some keynotes, but it's all around the fact that if we can work on healing from the pain that we have inside of us, then we'll stop carrying it around with us, but we'll also stop spreading it. Is that we can then make choices about how we want to act. One of the things that I talk about with forgiveness is it gives me the opportunity to live out my values.
Oh, Tim, I asked you a huge question and I gave you zero time to answer it. So I want to come back to the forgiveness factor and what exactly that means. And I also really want to incorporate forgiveness in caregiving and in your mental health. So stay with us. We'll be right back with Tim Markle from The Forgiveness Factor. You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Today I am talking with Tim Markle from The Forgiveness Factor about the power of forgiveness. Tim, according to the article, Physical and Mental Health Effects of Family Caregiving, written by Dr. Richard Schultz and Dr. Paula Sherwood, caregiving has all the features of chronic stress experiences. It creates physical and psychological strain over extended period of time. It's accompanied by high levels of unpredictability and uncontrollability. It can create secondary stress in multiple area life domains, such as work, family relationships, and frequently requires high levels of vigilance. Caregiving fits the formula for chronic stress so well that it is used as a model for studying the health effects of chronic stress on the body. So when researchers, doctors want to study chronic stress, they get themselves some caregivers and start studying away.
Get them all into a room and start them talking about their experiences, and you are going to learn about chronic stress.
Right. And evidence on the health effects of caregiving gathered over the last two decades has helped convince even policymakers that caregiving is now considered a major public health issue. Tim, having a son with different abilities, is there anything that you would like to add, or could you speak to it when it comes to caregiving and chronic stress?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. And it sort of goes back to what we were talking about before, Liza, is the fact that the first thing is you need to be aware of all the areas that you're being pulled, and you're being pushed into this area and pulled into that area. And if you're not aware of all of the pressures that are going on, and we can feel the pressures.
Right.
And we can sort of intellectually know the pressures. But if we don't take that next step in saying, okay, I'm being pressured over here, I'm feeling pulled over here, psychologically I'm not doing well here. If we don't take the next step to say, okay, what am I going to do about it? How am I going to get myself back to a better place of function? It's one thing to live with this pressure and to live with the stress, and then it's another thing to decide that I'm going to do something positive about it, that I'm going to take some steps and not just live with it, but I need to figure out a way to help me thrive in the middle of this pressure, in the middle of the chronic stress. What am I going to do to continue to keep me functioning?
Right.
Not just go through the motions day by day by day and continue to get pushed down and pushed down and pushed down.
And it all starts with that awareness. And to be honest with you, that's why I threw this big pitch out there of, hey, I want to do the Empowered Caregiver, because I feel like there needs to be more awareness around the issue. You know, you buy a pack of cigarettes, there's a Surgeon General warning on the side of the box. There's not when it comes to caregiving. And not only is there not a lot of knowledge widely spread out there about some of the possible negative implications of caregiving, most people don't even realize or accept that they're a caregiver, right? They're a mom, they're a dad, they're a brother, a sister, a daughter, a son. So they don't even know that they're in the role.
Yeah, you sort of fall into it.
Right.
Is you sort of, you don't understand that there's a certain level. Everybody has stress. Being a parent itself has some stress to it. And then you add the added layer of having someone with special needs or differing abilities and a world that's not designed for people that are too far out of what society would be considered normal. And so then you have this loved one who is struggling to fit in, and you're trying to help them as a parent to fit in, and you're trying to support their development. At the same time, you're juggling with all the different areas, the medical and the school. And sometimes you just sort of, your eyes open and you're just like, how did I get here? How did I get into the middle of all this? I thought I was going to have this adorable little perfect kid, and all of my dreams were going to come true, and we were going to have football players, and we're going to have soccer players, and we're going to have people that were in drama, and all of a sudden we have these kiddos that are struggling to find themselves and that aren't following the same timeline that other families' kids are.
Right.
Which could bring in a little bit of grief in its own right.
And that's our experience, because we both have adult children on the autism spectrum, but there's many different types of caregiving out there, caring for, you know, your parents, somebody with a chronic health condition, veterans, those with mental health and struggling with substance abuse. They all require a level of care. So I just want to say, I just want to throw that out there as we're trying to define caregiving and who are caregivers. That's part of the problem. There's a lots of different kinds. Not that it's a problem, but there's a lots of different kinds of caregiving. But I want to go back to this article goes on to say, recently researchers have focused not only on providing care as a cause of distress, but also on the caregiver's perception of how much the patient is suffering. I never thought about this one. Not all illnesses entail suffering, and some patients respond to illness or disability with a calm and optimistic manner, while others respond with fear and hopelessness. They recently found that two types of patient suffering are emotional and existential, easy for me to say, or one's spiritual well-being. We're significantly associated with caregiver depression and the use of antidepressant medications. So what I'm getting from that is when you are caring for someone that is emotionally suffering or not in a good spiritual place, then you yourself cause your own pain and suffering, right? Which would make perfect sense.
Makes perfect sense. I don't like to see the people that I love in emotional pain. And what sort of doubles down on that is the fact that there's not always something I could do about it. I mean, if there is some physical pain, if someone is in physical pain or they have a physical barrier, then maybe I can rally the medical community or I can rally people to help them overcome that physical barrier. But if someone is having that spiritual, emotional, this pain that sort of sometimes could pervade life and can lead us down that road of hopelessness.
Right.
Wow. How do I help them? How do I feel so helpless in those situations? And that can wear on me as a caregiver.
This is where a really big, hard question comes in. And as I was thinking about questions, I'm going to get him. He's so good. He knows how to answer everything so perfectly. I'm going to leave him speechless. But my question is, where does forgiveness come into this? When you are caring for someone that is suffering, which in return creates your own sadness and suffering, does forgiveness have a place in that scenario?
Absolutely. I think one of the areas that it comes into is the fact that when I feel helpless and I feel like I'm not able to really take care of someone, then I start to feel guilty about it. And I start to think that maybe I should have done more. Maybe I should have made this difference, or maybe I should have made that choice. And so we have to work on forgiving ourselves for some of our past mistakes, and we need to move on.
Tim, I knew it. That was a wonderful answer. And I swear you're the only person that I know that I could ask a huge question, give 30 seconds to wave my hands nonstop while you're talking, and you still just nailed it. So awesome. I am talking to Tim Markle from The Forgiveness Factor. When we come back, we're going to talk about the qualities needed to be a successful caregiver and what we do when we struggle in those areas. You're listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Today, I'm talking with Tim Markle from The Forgiveness Factor. Tim's teachings are based on the work of Dr. Robert Enright, the father of forgiveness research. Since May is Mental Health Awareness Month, I thought Tim would be a perfect guest because I personally believe, like I had stated earlier, that forgiveness can play a huge role in one's mental health. And as we were talking about, caregiving can really impact one's mental health. And part of that reason is you're just so caught up in it and you're doing it for a person that you love. You may not even identify as yourself as a caregiver. And, you know, your mental health, your physical health, your financial health, they can all be placed on the back burner to take care of the person that you love. So, Tim, according to an article in VNS Health using data from the AARP, a 2020 study was done, and they came up with some of the top qualities needed to be a successful caregiver.
Ooh, do I get to rate myself? Is this like one of those quizzes in the magazine?
We could come up with something.
Okay.
We could. But what I want to do is I want to go through some of these qualities and just get your wisdom on them and where you think caregivers might struggle and where forgiveness might fit in within these qualities. So the first one, patience. That's like a no-brainer, right? People who need care often take longer to complete simple tasks. They may ask the same questions over and over. Good caregivers need to be patient to deal with anything from a loved one's memory lapses to anger and outbursts. The practice of staying calm and avoiding frustration is key. Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. What that makes me think about is, what happens when I'm doing my best and I'm trying to be patient and have that patience, and then all of a sudden I lose my crap. Mm-hmm. And I just get overwhelmed and I scream or I stomp out. What happens after that? you know, I need to learn to go back and apologize for one, instead of just assuming that, oh my gosh, because everything is so hard, then I get to act like a total jerk. No, I do not get to act like a total jerk. Even though life can be overwhelming, that does not give me the right to demean or hurt somebody else, emotionally or physically or in any sort of way. And so first I need to take responsibility for my actions when I do lose my crap. And then I have to put it into context. What was going on? What were the pressures that were surrounding me when I was losing my crap? Was there something extra going on? Was there that extra financial pressure? Had the pot of water just exploded on the stove? Had the dog decided to just throw up on the... What were all of those extra things that were going on that led me to not act the way that I wanted to? That led me to act in a way that was not normal for me? And then I take those things into consideration and I sit there and say, okay, can you see the reality of the pressure that you're under, Tim? Can you give yourself a little bit of compassion, hold a little self-compassion for yourself, which the first one of the first steps to forgiveness is that compassion, is that feeling for compassion for the other people, to that feeling of compassion for yourself.
Oh my gosh, Tim, you are so dang good. Compassion is the next quality. You just went right into it. I don't even need to read the list. Talk to me more about the compassion piece.
Well, the way that I describe it when I talk to my class is that sometimes when people hurt us and sometimes when life gets hard, we make those people, we make life out to be these horrible monsters that are coming up from the depth. You know, think of all your Godzilla movies or your kaiju movies and you have these monsters that they have no moral compass. They're just monsters.
Can I think about those Desperate Housewives movies?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Same sort of thing.
Same kind of people.
rising from the depths.
Right.
But I don't have, I don't want to extend compassion toward the monsters. They are being monsters, and I just want them to stop. That's not who humans are, though. Humans aren't just these one-dimensional monsters that are just running roughshod through lives. Something has happened to them to make them act that way. Something has happened. Something has gone drastically wrong in their life for them to treat another human being that way. So I need to go back and I need to reaffirm who they are as a human. Even as this person may be pulling on my last loose string possible, they are still a human being. They are still deserving of worth. They have inherent worth. When I can look at that person not as that kaiju monster from Beverly Hills, but as a human being who has been broken, who has been hurt, who is struggling just the way I am broken and hurt and struggling, then it's to that person that I can extend compassion to.
And that makes so much sense. One thing that I recently heard, which was like such an aha moment for me, and it keeps coming up in the patience and the compassion, is I was listening to a podcast, and he was actually a trauma expert trained at and Harbor, and he said that focusing on unity is just so much harder than when we choose division. And it just, you know, putting it in the political arena of today, it's like, wow, that's true. He went on to say it's so much easier to be mad and point a finger and blame someone for that anger than it is to come together and find that unity, to use that patience, to use that compassion to get us through it.
Yeah, it's almost like we're now preconditioned to find those differences. And we're preconditioned to go behind our own little walls and have the people that we agree with, and we just talk in this echo type chamber, and we're convinced that we have all the answers. And the reality is that I don't have all the answers.
Who does? I am talking with Tim Markle from the Forgiveness Factor. We're talking about the qualities that you need to be a good caregiver, to protect your mental health. And you've got some wonderful words of wisdom. I don't know how to tie forgiveness into the next quality needed to be a successful caregiver. All I know is you and I got it. And that's humor.
The ability to take yourself not so seriously is such a huge part, I think, of caregiving. Is we're going to make those mistakes. We're going to drop things. Things will break. Things will get stained. We will say the wrong thing, sometimes on the radio. And if we don't take ourselves lightly, and if we're not able to laugh at that, then we're just going to, it's like adding another weight on, is putting yourself down in yet another way and reliving those mistakes over and over and over again, rehearsing them and reminding ourselves of them is just a way of reinforcing that inner thoughts that we have that I'm not good enough, that somehow I am not living up to what is usually an impossible standard that we set for ourselves. And so I think humor is one of those ways where we can keep ourselves balanced and keep ourselves refreshed.
I think so, too. I mean, humor is a huge coping mechanism for me, for some, or some might say it may be a way to distract, to, you know, whatever. But for me, it's what gets me through, because I know it's only a matter of time until the next something happens.
Oh, yeah. There's always going to be something's going to happen.
Right.
That's life. And so finding those times, whether it's a podcast that makes you laugh, whether it's a go-to movie, something that lifts your spirits is really important. And to tie that back to forgiveness, because it's really hard for me to forgive someone if I myself am in this dark place.
Sure.
If I am always negative, if I am always, if I feel I'm stuck in my negative emotions, it's going to be a lot harder for me to reach out with that compassion, to see that compassion. And so humor helps keep me balanced so that I don't go down and stay stuck in those dark places.
I like that. I mean, a lot of life is heavy, and humor is a way to add lightness for me to that experience. The next quality, being present.
Ooh. With all of the world going on around us, being present can be really, really hard to do. There's electronic distractions. There are people distractions. But at the end of the day, as I was just talking about this when Hunter, my son and I, we were just able to speak at the Autism Society of Greater Wisconsin Conference, and we talked about negotiating adulthood. Is what does it look like to move from a decision maker to a supporter, and what does it, from his end then, what does it look like to move from someone who's being supported to the decision maker? And one of the things that we talked about was the fact that no matter what therapies he goes through, no matter how many struggles he has, no matter how many jobs that he goes through, he is always going to be there. And so my primary job is to build that relationship with him so that no matter what happens in life, we're going to have that father-son relationship. I will always be his dad. He will always be my son. He may not always be employed. He may not always make the right decisions. I may not always be employed. I may not always make the right decisions. But if I can focus on that relationship, then we're going to be okay. And being present is focusing on that relationship. It's saying, this is what matters. This person in front of me with all their hopes, with all their dreams, with all their pains, with all their desires, this person is what matters more than the world that's around me trying to distract me. And it's building that relationship, because that relationship is going to outlast all of the therapies. It's going to outlast all of the personal cares. It's going to outlast it's going to outlast everything. It's that relationship that is going to be forever.
Yeah, and being present obviously makes for a stronger relationship. You know, when your mind is somewhere else and you're letting the stress come in and the to-do list come in, and it's all distracting from your caregiving experience. So that makes perfect sense. So, all right, here's the next one that trips me up big time. detail-oriented. Do you think you have to be detail-oriented to be a caregiver?
I guess. I'm not the best detail-oriented person.
You and I are going to have to be like, next subject, please.
Yeah, part of the days I think that detail orientation is overrated. Because I tend toward the relationship.
Right.
But there are times where I can definitely see that having a list, having a checklist, making sure that things are done is for some people that could be really, really important. And for some people, it can be very comforting and it gives them a sense of control and they feel accomplished at the end of the day. I totally get that. And if you're one of those people, great. Yeah. Go for it. You keep your lists. You keep your post-it notes. The rest of us, we will continue to fly by the seat of our pants.
Right. And you know what? I'm catching up to you because I will tie forgiveness into being detailed oriented.
Go for it.
And that's where it goes back to what you said earlier about the guilt. You know what? I'm not detailed oriented. I am terrible at calendars and all the executive functioning adult stuff that I'm supposed to be able to do. And you know what I do? I beat myself up over and over and over over it.
And if you're like me, you then continue to define, and this isn't a bad thing, but you continue to try different things. And that's okay. But when those things don't work, it doesn't mean then that you're a failure. It doesn't mean that that I'm a failure.
Right.
It just means I've found one more way that doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Scratch that off the list.
Now, the truth is that chances are you're still succeeding in a number of different areas of your life.
Right.
You're probably still doing good stuff in other areas of your life. There are happy people around you. So something is going good. Well, what do we focus on? So in forgiveness, we also talk about, okay, what is it that you're thinking about? What is it that you're focusing on? What are the stories that you're retelling yourself in your head? Is the story you're retelling yourself, oh my gosh, I have really bad executive functioning and I'm never going to succeed and I can't keep track of anything. And so eventually I'm going to leave the stove on at the same time that I've decided to take up cigarette smoking and then I'm going to leave a lighter here and then everything's going to explode and there's going to be a gas leak. Where are our stories
right.
that we tell ourselves? Or are the stories we tell ourselves, hey, I have succeeded in the past. I have overcome in the past. That means I'm going to continue to overcome in the future.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Speaking with Tim Marco from The Forgiveness Factor, when we come back, we are going to talk more about the qualities of caregiving and what we can do in the areas that we struggle. You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Today, I am joined with Tim Markle from The Forgiveness Factor. And Tim and I have been talking about the qualities needed to be a successful caregiver. And this is based off a 2020 study that was done by the AARP. So we left off at the ability to accept help. Asking for help is not a sign of weakness. A good caregiver realizes that they cannot do it all alone. They line up their friends, their family, or professionals to step in when they need a break. So, Tim, ability to accept help and forgiveness. How do you tie those together? Or what are your thoughts on the ability to accept help? Because that is a very hard one for caregivers. Caregivers want to be the people that provide help, not
Absolutely.
The ones that get help or take help or accept help.
Right. It takes a lot of strength to say I'm overwhelmed. Society says push through. Keep going. Come on. You got that. You know, we all want to believe we have this inner strength and these inner reserves. But the truth of the matter is that we all can get drained dry. And then we're not useful to anyone. And so part of being able to ask for help is to sit there and look at my lives. Where am I not? Where maybe could I be doing a little bit better in dealing with my emotions, in dealing with my anger, in dealing with the past stories that I tell myself? And then where can I get help to sort through all that stuff? I don't know about you, but sometimes when I try to sort through everything that's in my head, it just makes it worse because I don't have the right perspective. And so yes. Bringing in somebody else, a counselor, a coach, a friend who can help us sort through the jumble of emotions and the jumble of past stories that we tell ourselves can help us.
And you know, definitely when we're talking about us and our emotions and our own personal health and well-being, but sometimes asking for help can be just completely unrelated. We're listing all of these qualities that you need to be, quote unquote, be a successful caregiver. Well, not everybody has all of these qualities. So if there are areas that you struggle with, can someone help you? We talked about our strengths and weaknesses, right? Where can you get help on your weaknesses?
And one of the things that I think about is we live in a fantastic age that we have options that we never used to have. I think about the other day I wasn't feeling well. So I was feeling really sick and my wife was super busy and my son was super busy, but I really wanted Jell-O. I really wanted pudding because that would make me feel better. I live in the day where if I'm willing to pay for it, Instacart will deliver anything they want.
Right.
So where are those areas that technology, where maybe you don't have to go out and do something, that it can come to you? A lot of pharmacies will deliver. And so taking advantage of the technology, taking advantage of the world we live in to help support ourselves, to maybe take one thing off our plate. That way, I didn't have to go to the grocery store. Nobody had to go to the grocery store for me.
That makes sense. And I think it would be a good use of time for people to kind of think about those areas. Because sometimes, you know, in caregiving, you do. You just do, and you don't stop to think, can anybody else be doing this for me?
We get stuck in our routines. We're very routine-oriented because it's a lot quicker to do the same thing that I usually do. It's much quicker.
Makes total sense. I'm speaking with Tim Markle from The Forgiveness Factor. We're talking about some of the qualities of caregivers. So there's two left. If we can hit on these, the next one is being cooperative. A good caregiver is part of a care team that includes doctors, families, and friends. Being understanding and flexible goes a long way towards being a successful team player. What's your take?
Oh, my goodness. So my take may not be right along the lines of the AARP and the article. Yes, I would agree with all that. But being a team player, being on a functional team, I can only do so much.
Right.
Is if people don't want to play in the sandbox with me, I can't make them.
Amen.
So yeah. One of the things that I've learned along the way is I may not find everything I'm looking for in a caregiver, I may not find everything I'm looking for in a therapist or in a home health worker, but if I can find someone who at least will treat me with respect and is willing to learn and is willing to listen to me, I will take them on my team more than I will that person who may have more experience, may have more knowledge, may be the best in their craft, but they don't want to listen to me.
Right.
I don't want them on my team. The way that I put it is sometimes we can't find that unicorn that we're looking for our kids, for our family members. But if I could just find an interested horse,
sure,
then I'm happy. Give me a horse that wants to learn, and then I will stop searching for that unicorn.
I like that. And I had a thought, I kind of lost it, that cooperation is more about, I guess, that finding that common ground, you know, what can we come together on? What can we make work? It doesn't always have to be that big team player attitude.
Exactly. Is what is my role to help move things forward? And who else can help things move forward? And what's their role? What can they do that I can't? And how can I tap into that?
Makes perfect sense. Okay, last question. Few minutes. Here we go. I'm not sure off the bat I can tie forgiveness into this one. But last characteristic of a good caregiver, being assertive. Good caregivers advocate for their loved ones. They ask questions and expect answers. Good caregivers learn about their loved one's conditions and they make sure their loved one gets the care that they need. How do you insert forgiveness into that, being assertive?
Oh my gosh. Right in the area when we talk about forgiveness, forgiveness is not becoming a doormat. Forgiveness is not sitting there going, oh, well, you know, you hurt me and you've been hurt, so I guess it's okay. It's not okay. It's not okay to be hurt. It's not okay to have our loved ones mistreated or to not receive the care that they deserve. Forgiveness goes along with boundaries. Is we can set those boundaries in our life, even as we are forgiving people that hurt us, is we do not have to allow ourselves to be continually hurt. Is forgiveness is not an open door to pain. It can set boundaries and say, you know what, right now you are not a safe person for me. And so I'm going to set this boundary up and I'm going to spend limited time with you. And sometimes we need to do that with different people in our lives, even as we're caregiving. Not everybody gets our family members. And so to continually expose ourselves and expose our family members to people that treat them in a negative or in an understanding way is not healthy. And so even as we go about forgiving, even as we go about having compassion, we can also set limits and we can also set boundaries in our lives.
I love that. Forgiveness is not throwing boundaries out the window.
Absolutely not.
Thank you so much for being here with me today, Tim. I wish we could talk weekly. There's so much to cover, and you're an excellent speaker, and you nail it every single time.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.